The man that has two talents, I speak of him tonight because he it is who represents most of us. Most of the people in this room tonight are not five-talent people. And most of the people in this room tonight are not one-talent people. The great majority of people in this room tonight are two-talent people. Now, it's easy to become interested in the five-talented fellow. I'll be quite frank with you. I'd like to preach on him because he's the sparkler. I mean, he's the guy, he's something else. He is the great leader. His name is in the headlines. His picture's on the poster. He has a high degree of visibility. His name is Lee Robertson. His name is John Rice. His name is Bill Rice. His name is Bob Jones, the fellow with the five talents. However, it's also easy to look and emphasize the fellow who has the one talent. He it is who overcomes obstacles. We like him. We honor, you know, take for example, at pastor school, we almost always honor somebody, and we almost always honor somebody who has five talents or one talent. We hardly ever honor anybody who has two talents. They don't appeal to us a great deal. This fellow has one talent. I mean, a guy that's crippled. And I'm talking about the Richard Millers, have no arms and no legs, and yet can play the organ. I'm talking about the fellow with the one talent. Now, we honor them. He it is who overcomes obstacles. No one expects anything out of him, and so when he succeeds, we all applaud. His testimony is amazing. I'm talking about the Tim Lees. Both legs lost in the war, and yet he travels around the country preaching the gospel. I'm talking about the Fanny Crosbys, blind, all of her life nearly, and yet overcame it and wrote so many hundreds and thousands of poems and gospel songs. I'm talking about the Ruth Valchunases here in our own church, a young lady in our church who had lost both of her legs in a car accident, yet she learned to drive, or an accident of some kind, yet she's learned to drive a car and keeps on going, learned to walk with two artificial limbs, unbelievable. And we honor those. Their testimonies are amazing. So it's easy for us to give attention to the five-talented fellow. He stands head and shoulders above all of us. I'm talking about David's. I'm talking about Solomon's. I'm talking about Saul's. I'm talking about Paul's. I'm talking about Samson's. I'm talking about Elijah's. I'm talking about Elisha's. I'm talking about Abraham's. I'm talking about Noah's. I'm talking about these men who have five talents and these people who have five talents. They attract us. They appeal to us. They become our leaders. We look at them. We admire them. We make them our heroes. And well, we should. Nothing wrong with that. They get attention. They deserve attention, but it's easy to give them some. And same thing is true with the one-talented people. My soul. When one of those people succeeds, who rises from a wheelchair and succeeds. I'm talking about the Franklin Roosevelts now. I'm not a follower of his politically, but I admire him as far as his character was concerned. A president of our nation from a wheelchair overcame the obstacles. I'm talking about the one talented person, the one who rises like Abraham Lincoln did from the log cabin, and not really a five-talented person mentally, was Abraham Lincoln, but becomes the president of our... Now, the five talented men, that's the Ronald Reagans. We admire them because they have the five talents. But we also admire the people who have the one talent and who overcome the obstacles. I'm thinking about a lady down south who has a bus route, built a big bus route. She's in a wheelchair and goes out bus calling in her wheelchair. I'm thinking about the fellow I used to pastor in Garland, Texas, named Bill Falstaff. Bill Falstaff was a deacon. Bill Falstaff was a soul winner. Took his blind, totally blind, took his cane and found his way up the sidewalk and found his way up the steps and then rang the doorbell and felt his way and rang the doorbell and folks came to the door and this blind man would tell them about Jesus Christ. Bill Falstaff was a television repairman, television and radio repairman. Can you imagine sticking your finger in there and not knowing? I mean, I won't stick my finger in there anyhow. No way. I can see, but my finger ain't going to go in the back of no radio or television set while the thing's plugged in. No way. But Bill Falstaff would reach in there and fix those radios and blind. And I've seen him many times up on top of a house fixing an antenna, walking around on top of the house. Now, to me, I get scared. Well, I get scared going out on the front porch. Walking on top of the house. It's easy to admire people like that. But now, the two talented fellow, he's blah. Most of us are. I'm a two talented man. I confess to you, I'm not a genius, but I'm not a nut. I'm not rich, but I'm not poverty stricken. I'm not strong, but I'm not paralyzed. I'm a two-talented man. I'm in that group. I'm not the one-talented man. I'm not the five-talented man. And the majority of us are in that group of people with two talents. We're not rich. We're not poor. We're not strong. We're not weak. We're not scholars. We're not dunces. We're not highly praised. We're not greatly despised. That's where I leave the two-talent man just for a little while. We're not sages, but we're not fools. We are we're joy toned down by troubles. We neither rise to the heights nor lower ourselves to the depths. We are crowned with no garlands, but we're pelted with no stones. We are not great saints, most of us, but we're not great sinners either. We're not the Arctic frost, but we're not the torrid heat of the equator either. Now, don't misunderstand me. I'm not talking tonight about magnifying the fellow who is not using the best of his power, what he has. I'm not talking tonight about the use of powers. I'm talking about the possession of powers. I'm talking not about what you do with what you have. I'm not saying that those that don't work too hard. Are the ones that I magnify. No, I'm not. If you have one talent, you're supposed to work with all your might. If you have five talents, you're supposed to work with all your might. If you have two talents, you're supposed to work with all your might. So I'm not talking about tonight the use of powers being moderate. I'm talking about the possession of powers being moderate. Now, I'd like to speak tonight of the advantage of being in that group of people who have the two talents. Now, I have several advantages. One I have is this. Less is expected of him than a fellow has the five talents. So it's an advantage. Everybody expects a five-talented man to succeed. But the fellow has two talents. Nobody thinks about him as ever being any ripple. Everybody looking here now. Everybody looking here. All the college students, look right here. You can fiddle after a while. You come to church. You come to church. You don't come sit and fill up a pew for a while. You listen to me. And so I'm saying that the five talented fellow, everybody, boy, he's going places. He's going places. And the one talented person, poor fellow can't make it. But the two talented fellow, not as much as expected of him. I remember years ago, I was preaching at Bob Jones University, pardon the expression. But I was preaching at Bob Jones University. I say that because there's a Hiles Anderson College. I told Dr. Robertson and Dr. Bob Jones both one time. I'm sorry that nobody ever goes to either of those colleges anymore. And they said, why don't they? I said, because the Scripture says you're not supposed to. And Dr. Jones said, where does it say it? And I said, well, it says in 1 Corinthians 13, when that which is perfect is come, then that which is in part shall be done away. And so he did not think it was as funny as you did. But Dr. Robertson did not seem to be overly impressed with my attempt at humor either. I thought it was hilarious. But anyway, I'm saying, Dr. Bob, I was down preaching at Bob Jones University must have been 20 years ago. Dr. Bob III, who's now president of the university, was at that time a graduate student there in the university working on his master's degree. And one day, I'd spoken in the old Old Heaver Auditorium, didn't have the new one then. I'd spoken in the old Old Heaver Auditorium. And the dining hall was across the campus. I'm guessing it must have been a quarter of a mile to the dining hall. And so he asked me if I'd ride with him in his car. So I got in the car, Dr. Bob Jones III, and we drove over to the dining hall. And before we got out, he didn't want to get out. I could tell it. He wanted to talk a while. So I didn't open my door because he didn't open his. And Dr. Bob III began to cry. And I said, Dr. Bob. It wasn't Dr. Bob then. I said, Bob, what is it? And he said, I envy you, Dr. Hines. And I said, you, Bob Jones III, envy me? He said, yes. I said, why would Bob Jones III envy Jack Hiles? And he wept and he said, because I envy the fact that your dad was a drunkard. I said, what? You envy the fact that my dad was a drunkard? Yes, he said, I envy that. I said, why? Dr. Bob III, who was at that time just a young man, said, Dr. Hiles, everybody knows what I'm going to be. Someday I'll be president of Bob Jones University. You know, they pray down there in the name of the Father, the Son, and Bob III. And he said, everybody knows someday I'm going to be president of Bob Jones University. There's no way, he said, I can surprise anybody. There's no way that I can go beyond what's expected of me. Everybody knows what I'm going to do. Everybody knows what I'm going to be. Now, he said, you, with your father, a drunkard, and being reared in poverty, nobody expects anything of you. I've heard you tell your life story about your childhood. He said, nobody expects anything of you. He said, I envy you. You know, I sat there and thanked God I was a two-talented man instead of a five-talented man. And tonight, if you're in that, most of you, we don't have many folks in this room, if anybody, a five-talented person, maybe a few. If I were going to pick out somebody that's a five-talented person, I'd probably pick out somebody like Dr. Cowling or Dr. Evans, maybe. If I was going to pick out a one-talented person, I'd pick out Stan. No, I'm sorry. That's one more than I thought he had. But if I were going to pick out the no-talented people, I have some I'd choose there also. But I'm saying that most of us are two-talented people. Now, it doesn't give you an excuse not to do your best. God uses two talented people. In fact, as I'm going to tell you after a while, probably God uses more two talented people than does five talented people. And the great thing about being a two talented person, brother, we don't expect you to bring back two more. But bless God, if you bring back three more, boy, they shock. They give you standing ovation. If you bring back four more, man, you're going to be in the Hall of Fame someday. If you bring back five more, they drop dead. Be surprised. You see, that's why I like the idea of being a part of the great mass of society. So there's room for growth and not as much as expected. And so tonight I'm talking to that person that sometimes envies the five-talented person. Don't do that. Two talent, don't do that. You rejoice that God has given you two. And you use the two that God's given you. And you bring dividends to the cause of Christ with the two talents God's given you. And say, thank God, I belong to that great mass of society. But I'll do my best. I'm pressing on the upward way. New heights I'm gaining every day. Still praying as I onward bound. Lord, plant my feet on higher ground. Lord, lift me up and let me stand by faith on heaven's tableland, a higher plane than I have found. Lord, plant my feet on higher ground. I'm saying, hey, two-talented person, quit your complaining and quit saying you can't do it. Yes, you can do it. God is teaching us here that less is expected of you, and you can be more pleasing to Him, more pleasing to God's people than the five-talented fellow. There's a second thing about the two-talented fellow, and that is he's not overlooked like the one-talented fellow. When somebody chooses a Sunday school teacher, they don't go to the one-talented fellow. They don't go to him. No, nobody expects anything out of him. He just has the one talent, and he's not considered taken seriously. And so I just say this: thank God that you're not the one-talented fellow. You know, for every, I was thinking today about Phyllis Penton, little gal that about 2'10", was here several years. She's in Toledo now. I saw her just a few weeks ago. I think of Phyllis. Now, Phyllis has overcome so many things. Went to college, got a little tricycle, and rode around college all the time. Did she get her degree or not? I think she did. But anyway, went to college. And travels across the country. Has traveled years ago. She traveled across the country. No talking, please. Took a little tricycle with her. Traveled across the country. Airplanes, little bitty short thing. And folks applauded. Listen, for every one Phyllis Penton that does that, there are 10,000 little people like that that are somewhere nobody cares anything about them. And so thank God tonight that I'm a two-talented person. Thank God that I'm not the one talented old people overlook. And thank God I'm not the five talent that people expect everything from. I want to say this, and this will just be brief. I want to say this, and that is the third advantage of not being a too talented person is you have a happier personal life if you're a too talented person. You see, you only see the five talented people on the platform. You see Lee Robertson and four great crowds of people and say, boy, I'd like to be like that. You don't see him alone and not with the crowd. You don't see him maybe wishing he could join the crowd. And you don't see it. Dr. John Rice said one time to me, if there was a five talented, John Rice is the smartest person I ever knew in my life. John Rice is the only preacher I've ever met that I think could be president of the United States and run it and have enough sense to run it, besides myself. But only one. Five talented man. John Rice said something one night to me. There was a party after church. And we wouldn't have gone if they'd invited us, but nobody invited us anyhow. You know, we like to be invited. And so we can say no. So the party was at our hotel. And it was in a banquet room. And our rooms were close enough to the banquet room where we could hear them having fun. So Dr. Rice knocked on my door. I know why he did. He wanted to get with somebody. He heard him party. And knocked on my door. We were talking a while. And Dr. Rice said, he said, Dr. Hiles, he said, I don't know if I'd know how to party. And I said, what do you mean, Brother John? He said, I've been alone so much through the years. I don't know if I'd know how to party if I went to one. And that I felt pity for him. I really did. He didn't know how to fit in a group. All he'd done is preach and write books and win souls and serve God. But he'd never learned how to fit in. He's a five-talented person. Two talented people, that's where the crowd is. He didn't feel comfortable with the two talented people, the great crowd. Why? He's a five-talented person. I've often said this, and I'm not a five-talented person, but I run with a lot of them. I've often said this. If I had another life to live, I'd like to be normal. Don't take that up. Don't take that up. Hush. I know what you're thinking, and you've been influenced by this crowd up here too. And Dick, shut up. Wherever you are. If I had a life to live over, I'd like to be normal. I'd like to be an average fellow. Now I am an average fellow, but I run with folks that are not average, and I'd like to. My goal when I was a young man was to live in a little town, about 5,000 people, and have a little cottage there in the town and work about a half a mile downtown at the bank somewhere so I could get a few samples every now and then. And I wanted to work at the bank, and I wanted to walk to work every morning, and I wanted to know every dog on the way to work, and everybody, I wanted to wave to everybody and walk home for lunch and then walk back after lunch and then walk back and play croquet at night and go to bed. That's what I wanted to do. That was my goal. I never had any goal. I never appealed to me at all to be a leader of a great organization. Never had any appeal to me at all to be anything other than just normal and average. But I'm saying that the two talented people, rejoice that God has given you what He's given you. Don't complain because you don't have the five talents. Good night. Take the two you got and use them and multiply them. There's another advantage about being the two-talented person. That is, the two-talented person can have real compassion. You know, the five-talented person does not know the pain of the two-talented person. The man that has the five talents will never know the toil and the sacrifice and the suffering and the labor it takes for a two-talented person. He'll never know that. You know, what everybody in this world wants is somebody to understand, somebody to have compassion. Let me tell you a little story. The other day I was talking to some folks who flew over about 1,000 miles, and a couple of fellows who were disgruntled church members, but they loved me, and they agreed to talk to me, and I was trying to help the church situation back where they were, and both these fellows were sort of cattywampus with the pastor. So they flew all the way from another state, 1,000 or so miles, and I talked to them about 2 hours and a half. Now listen carefully. One of the fellows said, well, our pastor gets up in the pulpit, and right in the pulpit, he used the pulpit for a whipping post. Now, I never do that. You know I don't. You may sometimes think I'm talking to you, but I don't. I never preach a sermon and never make a statement, haven't for 25 and a half years behind this pulpit with anybody in mind. If a face ever comes in my mind while I'm preaching against a sin, I change the subject immediately and go another direction. I will not use my pulpit to smear anybody. I won't do it. I'll not ever use this pulpit to get back at anybody or run anybody down. I won't do that. But they said, our pastor, he'll get up in the pulpit and he'll just use the pulpit as a whipping post and he'll say some things about people that they've had conversation. And one of them said, you'd never do that, would you? And I said, no. Now listen to me. No. But I said, when I was his age, I did. You what? Yeah. When I was his age, I did. Oh, I probably shouldn't tell this. I don't know if I've ever told it here. I've told it at the college. Don't think I'm afraid to tell our deacons this. When I was a kid preacher, just a kid preacher. I told Dr. Evans this yesterday. He didn't know I'd ever. He never heard it. Of course, he sleeps when I'm preaching anyhow, and he didn't know. But I had a deacon got cattywampus to me one time. And I didn't know any better. I went to the store and got two sacks of groceries, canned goods, walked to the pulpit. I handed those canned goods to the deacons that were cattywampus, asked the widows to stand. The widows stood. I said, now you deacons, take the food to the widows. They took the food to the widows, came back to the front. I said, now you've just done everything the Bible says the deacon's supposed to do. Isn't that terrible? It's awful. I told those men I did that. Those men came 1,000 miles to hear me tell them that I was worse than their pastor is now when I was his age. They didn't learn to love. They didn't put hate in him. They just started hating me too. But now here's what I said. I said, fellas, I'm 59 years old. Go get some canned goods, Dick, and pass them out and sit down and shut up. Take that little fuzz on above your lip and transplant it to the top of your head. But now, wait a minute. Let me tell you what I said. Now, that one fellow there, he was cattywampus for the preacher, no doubt about it. Young man, fellow graduate of Ohio's Anderson College. Good guy, but he'd made some mistakes. Yeah, he had. He'd gotten up and he'd got in the middle of his sermon. He stopped and let two or three of them have it and almost called their names. And I said, let me tell you what caused it. I said, now I've learned to sort of block things like that out of my mind. But I didn't know how to when I was the age your pastor is now. So let me tell you why he did that. I said, it's Friday night. He's getting his sermon, thinking about his sermons for Sunday. He sits down at the table to eat about with his family on Friday night. Phone rings. He answers the phone. Somebody uses some dirty words and hangs up. He sits down and tries to eat again. Phone rings. Picks up the phone. Somebody says, we'll get you. We'll vote you out. We'll get you. Poor fellow puts the phone down. Tries to eat again. During the night, he gets a phone call. Somebody drops the receiver down. I said, he can't think about his sermon. Saturday morning, gets up, tries to study. He's like that, hasn't slept a wink Friday night. You fellows don't know about the phone calls he gets and the nasty letters that come. You don't know that. And I said, so what happens? He can't study on Saturday. He tries to study and his mind is so blocked with all that stuff and the phone calls and the dirty letters and the church is having trouble and they're trying to vote me out and who made the dirty obscene phone call and will they hurt my wife when I'm gone and all that's in his mind and he tries to study and he gets up on Sunday morning. He hasn't been able to study. Why? He's a young preacher and he's got burdens and heartaches and he doesn't know how to put them aside and he stands up in a pulpit and his mind is empty. He doesn't know what to say and before he knows it, he says what he's been thinking about. stepped over, and one of the fellows that was mad at the preacher's crying like a baby.
He said, "I never thought of it that way."
I said, "Then do think of it."
He said, "Yeah." He said, "When you put it that way, it makes me like him better."
I know. You know why I could help that preacher? Because I'm a too talented person. Watch out there. Don't say amen. I say I'm a too talented person. You let me be humble, but I'm a too talented person. I could have compassion on that preacher. I've been where he is. I've done what he's done. I've made the same mistakes he's made. And I know what the awful mistakes that he's made, I made. I understand that. And that's a good thing about being a too talented person. You can have compassion others can't have. That's one reason why they say that Ted Williams, for example, greatest baseball hitter who ever lived, I think, last batter that batted over 400, batted 406. Ted Williams, they tried to get Ted Williams to manage a baseball team, but Ted Williams couldn't manage a baseball team. You know why? Because Ted Williams wanted everybody to bat 406. He had no patience with the common people. Five talented baseball player. You know who makes the best managers? You just check the managers that succeed. The stars don't do it. Mickey Mantle? No. Joe DiMaggio? No. Ted Williams? No. No. Year after year, the guys that played in the minor leagues, the guys that batted 235. I'm talking about the Pittsburgh Pirate manager. Who was it? It just went to Atlanta. Tanner, Chuck Tanner. Yeah, average player. I'm talking about the manager of the Cubs, Jim Frey. Average player, below average player, too talented player. I'm saying the too talented man, less is expected. He is overlooked. He's not overlooked like the one talented man is. He has a happier personal life. He can have real compassion. Number five, he's not as lonely as the one talented man. See, the one talented, hear me carefully. The one talented person will either be on the platform or not even noticed at all. I've told this story in years and years. Sitting back over here somewhere, I'm sure she's here, one of our young ladies, mother and father, two of the finest folks we have. Young lady grew up in the church. She's one of oldest daughter Becky's best friends. She spent many a night at our house. In fact, she belongs to the ISBHIHP club. That's how I've seen Brother Hiles in his pajamas. I didn't know she was there one night, and I was walking down the hall in pajamas, and there she was. I didn't know we had company, and what a tremendous sight she saw. But she's crippled. She's badly crippled. When she became a senior in high school, she came to my office for a senior appointment, and I said, "You ought to go to college." She went to college for 2 years. She got was going to get a secretarial diploma of some kind. And I'm going to tell you right now, I hate those things. As well, go ahead and say it. I hate them. I think you ought to stay 4 years in college. I just do. If you're going to get one, that's better than nothing. But it's not near as good as getting your 4-year degree. It's better than coming to get a husband and get married your freshman year and quitting. It's better than that. But anyway, she said, "I want to quit. I've got my diploma after 2 years." There she sat, very crippled. And I called her by name. I won't call her name tonight. Many of you know who she is, but most of you don't. And I'll call her Betty. I said, "Betty, you ought to get your degree." She said, "I don't want to go back 2 years." And I said, "But you ought to go back 2 years and get your degree and become a..." "I don't want to be a school teacher, and that's what you want." I said, "I know it. But I said, you're crippled." Said, "Somebody like you, either you're going to be a rousing success or you're going to be at the mercy of society. There's no middle ground for a one talented person." And I'm talking about natural gifts now. I said, "You're either going to be a school teacher or a doctor or a lawyer or something that is highly successful, or you're going to be at the mercy of society on welfare." And I said, "Now, get back in college." She said, "But how'd you're mad at me?" I said, "Yes, I am." "Well, okay. Okay, I will." And she did. And she became one of the finest school teachers in our grade school. She's not there anymore. Has a baby now. But she became one of the finest school teachers in our grade school. She got a degree. I'm saying the one talented people can do it, but most of them don't. But the two talented person has no big obstacles like that to overcome. Number six. And I love it. Love this. The two talented person can get the same words said by Jesus someday as the five talented person. Five talented person came back and said, "Boy, look at here. Let me show you what I brought back here. I'll tell you what. I happened to bring this tonight for the sermon, and said, I'll tell you what. Here's the one, and you gave me, and there's another, and there's another, and there's another, and there's another. And you want to know what else you got? I brought back this one. 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 Let me be sure I got it here now. And I brought back this one. What do you think about that?" And Jesus said, "Well done, thou good and faithful servant. Thou hast been faithful over a few things. I'll make you ruler over many." Hope I got enough quarters to finish this sermon. And this other fellow came back. Too talented fellow. "How'd you do?" "Well, I had these two. So I didn't bring back five, but said I brought back two more." And he looks over here and he sees his four and he sees his ten. And the fellow has the ten, looks over and sees those puny little four. And the fellow, "I didn't bring ten. I didn't have the two to start off with. I didn't have five at first." And Jesus turns and says, "Well done, thou good and faithful servant. Thou hast been faithful over a few things. I'll make you ruler over many." You folks that have been in the beginner department for 32 years and 31 years and 26 years and 25 years and 13 years, one of these days you're going to hear the same word said to you I'm going to hear said to me, and maybe better. Yeah. And one of these days you're going to have some of you faithful workers who stayed right with the stuff through these years. Same words are going to be said to you that were said to John Rice when he met the Savior. Yeah. And so, same thing. I'll get these fellows. Thank you very much. And but there's something else. The two talented fella, he has a bigger crowd running with him. Have more friends. Larger crowd. What else? He can be a better example. I mean, Ruth Balchunas that has no legs, she can't walk up and say, "Be like me." You're not going to get a saw and saw your legs off so you can be like Ruth Balchunas. I mean, the one talented person, nobody wants to copy him, and the five talented person is almost uncopyable. If you don't believe it, try preaching payday someday sometime. I did. When they heard it, they changed it to salary day after a while. I mean, look, there's no way I can be an R.G. Lee. There's only one. Hey, that's the good thing about being a two-talented person. You know, I one night I was preaching in Kansas City, Missouri, and on the program, get this, on the one program, and this has been 20 years ago or more. I was a young man then. On that program, Dr. Bob Jones Sr., Dr. Bob Jones Jr., Dr. Bob Jones III, Dr. John R. Rice, Dr. R. G. Lee, and everybody was on there but the Apostle Paul and did it Sunday. I mean, big long list. And then they said, closing message, Reverend Jack Hiles. And I looked at that program and I thought, what in the name of common sense am I doing closing this meeting? And why did God put me on the scene with all these big preachers? And it dawned on me that night, I'll never forget it, that night. I think I know why. Because there cannot be another R.G. Lee. Never will be. And I don't care where you go, you will never hear a man preach, young man preach, and you'll say, "He reminds me of R.G. Lee." You'll never do it. You'll never do it. And by the way, you will never hear anybody preach like old Dr. Bob Jones Sr. either. No way. There'll never be another. I used to say there'll never be another Bob Jones, but there are two more. But no, there'll never be another. And there'll never be another brain like John R. Rice's brain. And you'll never copy John R. Rice. Never will. I dare you to show me some preacher. You won't find two or three preachers in America that say, "You remind me of John Rice." But you know what you'll find? All over this nation, you'll find a bunch of little Jack Hileses hollering and screaming and coughing and spitting and spewing all over this country. You know why? Because a two-talented man can be copied. He can become a stencil and run off copies of himself. Yeah. Almost everywhere I go, hey, I heard one of your preacher boys, man, he just like you. He didn't mean handsome. He meant the way you preach. He just like you. You know why? Because the two-talented person is copyable. And he can reproduce himself. And folks can be like him. Oh, I'm glad I'm not a five-talented person today. I'm glad I'm not a one-talented person. I'm glad I belong to that great mass of average common people that if I succeeded, everybody was shocked to death. And I had something I could surprise people with, and I could go beyond what they expected me to do. And yet, I wasn't so handicapped, I couldn't make it at all. Thank God tonight. I'm in the two-talented crowd. But I'm talking two-talented people. You won't do anything. You're going to wait till you get five talents or you won't play. You're not using it. I'm talking two-talented folks tonight that are bearing the two you've got. You don't teach a class. You don't go soul winning. You don't have a bus route. You're in that great, and you say, well, I'm just not deserving. I'm not worthy. But you have the two talents. Only that, the two talented people give God more glory than the five talented people. You hear Dr. R.G. Lee preach Payday someday, and you'll walk away and you'll say, wow, what an orator. You hear us little ragamuffin preachers, all we can do is holler and kick the pulpit. And you hear us preach, and brother, I guarantee you, if anything happens, God gets the glory for that. Yeah. He gets the glory. I want to say this, and I'm winding down. I may wind up again, but I'm winding down the first. The greatest works in the world are being done by two talented people. Who's pastor of the largest church in the Northwest? Oh, I know who it is. Fellow's got his Ph.D. from Baylor, a Southwestern cemetery. Aye, boy. It's that great orator. One that preaches all the Founders' Weeks. No, the guy, he preaches all the Losers' Weeks. Who has it? A polished fellow that's been through the leading school for the big names? Oh, no. No, a highway patrolman from down in Mississippi or Alabama one who weighed 350 pounds and didn't know how to drive a car because all he rode was motorcycle. Finally got an old jalopy and got his wife and family and put everything he had on his car and in his car and took off for Seattle, Washington to build a church. Got to a little town called, a city called Pasco and ran out of money. He said to his wife, we haven't got enough money to get to Seattle. Maybe God wants us to stop here and be a one here on the way. Stop there. Big old guy. Still rides a motorcycle. Still does. Carries a gun with him everywhere he goes. I'm the guy that ought to do that. But, I mean, listen. His people out there, just like he is. I wish you could see. I went out one day and I saw all these motorcycles lined up. And church wasn't going on. Church wasn't going on. Looked like Hell's Angels were having a convention. Church wasn't going on. A row of motorcycles from here to back wall back there. And I said, Pastor, what's that? He said, that's a staff parking lot. I said, how many men you got on your staff? He said, women too. I mean, all the women and men, all of them rode motorcycles to work. I was preaching out there one night, I'll never forget this. Preaching one night, and I was using an illustration. I said, now look, there's some things that are not sinful you shouldn't do. I didn't know at the time he rode a motorcycle. First time I'd ever out there. I said, for example, suppose you came to church next Sunday morning, and you had some visitors with you, and all of a sudden the visitor said, I want to meet the pastor. And all of a sudden, you saw your pastor coming around a corner on a motorcycle. I said, you'd be ashamed. Everybody started. After it's over, he said, I ride a motorcycle. He goes to the hospital, visits, parks his motorcycle in front of the hospital. big old strapping fella. About as eloquent as Eau Claire. 2 talents. 2 talents! Biggest church in the Northwest. 2,000 folks in Sunday school in Pasco, Washington. Go to his church. Most every man there got a little bump right there on the side of his coat. That's where his gun is. I mean, you don't see any man after that gun. You know why? Preacher's got one. I wouldn't dare carry one, boy. I'd just start. Boom. There are people all over this room would never go home tonight. Who is he? 2 talented man. Eloquent? No. Polished? Good night, no. Who is he? A man who had 2 talents, who gave both of them to God and said, I'll do my best. I'll give my best. I'm not an R.G. Lee. I'm not a Bob Jones. I'm not a John Rice. But God has given me 2 talents and I'll use them for his glory to the best of my ability. Who has the largest church in the Carolinas? A fellow named Bobby Robertson. I preached 20, 25 years ago down in Durham, North Carolina. Bob Robertson had a little handful of people out in the country. You stand on the front porch of his church, you couldn't see but 2 houses. He came and he heard me teach him a soul-winning lecture and went out soul-winning that day, won his first soul to Christ, ever won in his life. His life was changed in that Sword of the Lord soul-winning conference. Way out in the sticks, outside Winston-Salem, good night, 15, 20 miles out in the country. Guy's got a church, nothing in Charlotte as big as his, and nothing in Asheville as big as his, and nothing in Greenville as big as his, and nothing in the entire North and South Carolina as big as that church running 3,000 in Sunday school. Who? 2 talented person. 2 talented person. Who has the greatest missionary work in the world? A little drink of water, went to Hiles Anderson College. Little skinny fella, when he stepped on the scale, they said, put both feet on, please. Sat out in the corner of the college. I've seen him again and again and again. Never took him seriously. Walked around here like he was ashamed to be alive. Sat in the corner, but listened and listened and listened and listened and learned and studied and prepared. He walked, if I told you tonight, if he were here, if I told you the greatest missionary in the world probably is in this room tonight, you'd expect some 6'4", big, strong, strapping fellow with 10 talents to stand up with his personality and sway you. But you wouldn't see that. You would see a little old skinny guy come up here and almost apologize for living, and you couldn't hardly hear him talk over the PA system because you'd think he was too shy to speak. And yet tonight, a great church running thousands in Sunday school, and a great college with hundreds of people and dormitories and buildings in the Philippines. Why? Because he took his 2 talents and gave them all to God. Who has the second greatest soul-winning church in the world today? Who is it? Graduate of Hiles Anderson College. Greatest churches in this world being built. Greatest young preachers in this world building great churches are graduates of this college. Who has the second greatest soul-winning church in the world next to First Baptist Church Hammond? Fella came to our college. Nobody thought much of a nice fella, but nobody ever thought of him being a great preacher. Name's Bob Gray. Went down to Longview, Texas. Baptizes more people than any other church in the world tonight, other than the church where you're sitting right now. Who is he? 10 talented, 5 talented fellow? No. 2 talents. 2 talents. Gave them all to God. Who has the fastest growing church in the Carolinas tonight? Mike Haynes. Mike Haynes sat over here for how many years? 2 years. He and his wife sat right over here, and all he did was smile. I thought he was frozen with a smile. I don't even like him. He looked happy all the time. But he just sat there. Mike Haynes. I thought he was too sweet to pastor a church. Goes down to Charleston, South Carolina, takes a little handful of people, and builds the fastest growing church in the Carolinas, running hundreds and having thousands of people saved. Why? Because he took his two talents. A lot of our five talented fellows got expelled. They didn't need to fill out the reports. They didn't need to keep little piddling rules. They didn't need to fill out absentee slips, and they didn't need to do such menial task as making a bed properly. They're too busy. They got five talents. But a two-talented fellow can make a bed. And a two-talented fellow can clean the bathtub when he gets through using it. And a two-talented fellow can study and read. Who has the fastest growing church in New England? Little guy sat in this college and sat in these pews. Almost apologized for living. Went over here and got a little church out in the country and tried to do something with it and became an assistant pastor in New England. And a church called him. A pastor in New England told me the other day, he said, that is the finest pastor in this state. He said, there's no church, no college in America turning out pastors like Hiles Anderson College. That's the truth. Who has the largest church on, who built the largest church on the Eastern Shore? Little old guy came to college here, almost bald-headed by the time he graduated. Came to me one day and said, Brother Hiles, could I come to your office? College is small and can't do this now. He said, I come to your office and would you give me 15 minutes a week on a Saturday night, son? I said, I'll do it. He'd come to my office. He'd say, just talk. I won't take notes. I'd just choose a subject. He'd sit there, sort of mealy mouth, and almost said goodbye like it's apologizing. What'd he do? One little town on the Eastern Shores out there. They haven't got enough folks to have an 11 player ball team, hardly. Built the biggest church on the Eastern Shores, run 700 Sunday school. Then he left there. He went to Moanai, started from scratch, and kept scratching until he's running 400 or 500 Sunday school after a couple of years. Who is he? Too talented man. Too talented man. Who has the best youth program in the Deep South? I got a letter one day. I never have told this. I shouldn't ever tell it. But I got a letter one day from a little fellow named Mike Ray. Mike Ray. Weighs 32 pounds. He said, I'm coming to your college. He said, two reasons. I want to get my degree from your college, and I'm going to marry your daughter, Cindy. I never even told that. What did he say? Coming to get her. Well, I expected this big old strapping fellow to come and sweep her away on a white horse and ride. Boy, I waited for old Mike Ray to come. What's my future son-in-law is going to look like? I like a guy who's got goal and vision. I'm going to get my degree, and I'm going to marry your daughter, Cindy. One day a fellow knocked at my door. I went to the door and looked out. Nobody there. Looked down. There was the little fella in Miss McKinney's department. And he started to introduce himself, and he couldn't tell his name. He stuttered. You know, Mike. Stuttered. I'm Mike Ray. My son-in-law. Isn't this fun? You folks who don't believe in laughing in church, go on home. Get out. I'm tired of looking at you. Go on. Shh, shh. Get. Shoo. Go on. I'm tired of looking at your pusses. Anyhow. I looked out. Didn't have a white horse. He didn't get my daughter. After looking at what she got, I wish he had. But he didn't get my daughter. But the guy stuttered through school. Just two talents. About one and a half. Two talents. Just two. The other day I got a big package. Opened it up. It's a book. A real live book. Author, Mike Ray. I started reading it. Most of the words were spelled right. Author? Yeah. Author. Yeah. The other day I got a notice and said, come to the Great Southwide Youth Conference conducted by Mike Ray. Well, he can't look those teenagers in the eyeball. Mike Ray. Who's Mike Ray? These fellows got two talents, but he gave them all to God. Thank God tonight he can use the two talented people. That's what most of us are. How tragic it is that most of us are waiting for the five talented fellow to do the job, but he won't ever do it. Most of them won't ever do it. No, they're too suave. You know why? They can't reach the common man. They don't know the common man. Most of them can't do it. But the world is waiting tonight. And God is waiting for this country to be influenced for good and for God, and for souls to be saved and great works revealed by the two talented men. Our Heavenly Father.